Hello and welcome to What's Brewing. I'm your host, Blake Smith, and we are here with the What's Brewing series, which is the series in the Project Zion podcast where we talk about mission and what is mission and what does it mean to be in mission. And we get to talk to some really exciting people about what they are doing in mission. And today is no exception. I am here with a person who has been a guest here at Project Zion before, but this is the first time I've gotten to be with her, and that is Emily Rose. Welcome, Emily.
Hi, friends. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Well, I'm going to let you, let me first say to our listeners, we're going to be talking today about the Redwood Peace Colloquy. And if you're paying attention to church news or what's happening even in your area, you may have information about other peace colloquies because they're beginning to pop up in a variety of places. And there is specifically a peace colloquy that is happening in the Kansas City area in September, called the 2025 Peace Colloquy. And they're going to be talking about some similar topics. We'll talk about that a little bit as we go, and hopefully I'll get to do an episode with them as well. But today it's Emily and the Redwood Peace Colloquy. So Emily, how about you give us just a little bit of background about yourself? I know that you've been a guest before and lots and lots and lots of people know you, but for those who don't, tell us about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Emily Rose, and I live in Independence, Missouri with my husband, Daniel Harmon, and our little kiddo, Oliver. And my role, I actually work remote and serve the Sierra Pacific Mission Center. So that's the Northern California area, as a peace and justice minister. So I run several different programs for my role. One of those has been Love Out Loud. It's our online reading circle about peace and justice. And that actually started out of the 2020 Black Lives Matter uprising. It was an effort for us to do some anti-racism reading, and it evolved into more social justice reading. So that's been in progress for years now. And I also, my biggest part of my job is planning our annual Redwoods Peace Colloquy. So we've had that a couple of times now. This year is our third annual Redwoods Peace Colloquy, which is very exciting. Our first one was in San Jose, California, and we talked about food justice and soil and kind of climate ways to respond to the climate crisis through soil health and food. And then our second one addressed the intersections of racism and gun violence, and that took place in Washington, D.C. It actually ended with a lobby day that was just really incredible, super powerful. We had folks from 11 states across the country come, and so we booked all of these lobby meetings with our various representatives, and we were even able to convince one House member to sign on and be a co-sponsor of a bill that he hadn't heard about. So it was neat to feel that impact and to learn how to do that kind of thing, to take our faith into the halls of Congress and really try to make change that way. So that was really powerful. And this year, we are going to be in Portland, Oregon. We're partnering with the Greater Pacific Northwest Mission Center, as well as the Portland Congregation. And we're going to be talking about housing and economic justice and some of the intersections of the larger systemic issues that contribute to poverty and contribute to houselessness, and ways we can respond as people of faith. So I'm really excited. That's going to be in December, December 5th through 7th. And again, that's in Portland, Oregon. And I hope people come.
All right. Well, so many questions are popping up. First of all, I want to ask you, you live in the Central Field. You work in California, you work for Sierra Pacific Mission Center, and you have a peace colloquy that travels the country.
Yes.
So many questions, but the first one would be, so how did you end on Redwood Peace Colloquy when it's not always in the Redwoods? So
right.
help us understand that.
So we chose the name Redwoods Peace Colloquy for two reasons. The first is to really honor the start of this experience. So because we did start in the Redwoods, we actually all stayed at Happy Valley campgrounds in Santa Cruz. And if you haven't gotten a chance to go, I highly recommend it. It's in the Redwood,
Agreed, agreed.
the Redwood Forest of Santa Cruz. And so it really honors our origins and the mission center that has kind of birthed this event. But the second reason is really more focused on why we do what we do. So one really cool thing about redwood trees is they communicate and support each other through underground root networks. So if one part of a redwood forest is in danger and it's experiencing disease or a fire, they actually communicate that signal across the forest through the roots, and they've got these interconnected networks that can then send resources to those trees that are in danger. And so we want to mimic the redwood trees and start to build networks of peace and justice across the church and across denominations and different organizations. So our effort is really to connect folks in community of Christ who care deeply about peace and justice issues and want to live out their faith by standing up for vulnerable communities and doing what they can to make shalom real in their neighborhood. And we want to connect those folks to people in organizations and movements that are already doing incredible work so that we can support them and network with them. So that's the whole goal behind the Redwoods Peace Colloquy is my central theme is you people should know each other. And so that's our effort is when you come to the Redwoods Peace Colloquy, not only are you networking across the church to learn about what you're doing for peace and justice in various places, but you're also building relationships outside of us to really listen to people who are on the front lines of different justice issues and support them and learn from them.
That is just as I sit and listen to you express this small piece of the Redwood Peace Colloquy. It's so powerful, Emily, because I think we need to hear that again and again and again. I think growing up in Community of Christ for me, a lot of times in the congregations we're having, I'll just claim that for myself and not make some generalized statement. Although I think others have expressed to me in the past that they've experienced that, is that we plan a program based on either what we can do right there and perhaps even for the purpose of, well, hopefully it'll get people interested in the church or something that we want to get acclaim for in the community even. And I don't hear that at all. I think this model of doing something because peace and justice is your passion. And anything you can do across denominations, et cetera, to just share these resources and make these connections, that's really, really powerful.
Yeah. Can I say one more thing about
Yeah,
how what we
absolutely.
chose? So, I have learned two things. I've learned that colloquy is terribly hard to spell and not everybody knows what it is. But I've also learned what the word means, and there's a secondary definition that says it's a theological conversation. So that's another piece of this is that we are naming that this justice work is a sacred thing. This is a theological mandate that we have in Community of Christ to live out God's vision for shalom. So that's why we keep that as part of our name because we want to claim that. I think that there's real value in saying that you are responding to an issue from a place of faith, that our faith tells us that my welfare is bound up in your welfare, and therefore I care if you have health care. I care if the environment around you is clean. I care if you're safe from guns. I care if you're housed or you're paid fairly. That's a theological mandate that we're trying to live out with this event.
So I want to just say that you may have scared a few people. So, I say that kind of, you would have scared me 30 years ago. First of all, if colloquy, the word colloquy, as you've said, doesn't do it to begin with, and I can't tell you how many people have asked me, what is a colloquy? So
Sure.
thanks for sharing that. Then you say it's a theological piece, and then the rest of the people, that who were scared already are like, wait a minute, ah, that's a lot. So how do we make this where people feel comfortable? This is something that I I can do and be a part of.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to think about this being a theological expression is to take a look at our enduring principles, and our mission initiatives and imagine what it would mean to take those so seriously that you want to see them enacted in the world around you. So that you're not just hearing about them on Sunday morning, you're not just hearing about them at reunion, but you think the worth of all persons matters to me all the time. And I'm seeing that not everybody's worth is being protected in my community, and I want to do something about that. That's what it means to live out our theology. It makes real in the world the things we say we believe.
Excellent. Excellent way to explain that too. So now that everybody's at ease, and I asked that question because I remember actually being in seminary and not having had a philosophical background or even a religion background other than growing up in the church. I didn't take any courses in college, and so then it that were religion or philosophy. And so I got into this enterprise of theological pursuit in seminary. And I just remember going to my advisor and saying, first semester, I don't think I can do this. I don't think theologically. I mean, it just wasn't the way I was raised. And having an explanation like you've shared, I think would have helped me in those days. It is similar to what my professor told me. But you saying it makes it so much more believable and livable. So thanks for
Well, sure.
clarifying that.
This theology major nerd is happy to help.
I just remember that first semester I had a theology dictionary and a regular dictionary and the text I was reading and
I love
anything
it.
else I could find because I didn't even understand the language. So it is really helpful. And just hopefully our listeners will hear. I'm going to guess actually that most of our listeners engage in that level of conversation anyway, but not always. And so, but we all do theology, folks. We all do theology, for better or worse, right? So I want to ask you one more question just about some of the things you were saying, because you mentioned that the topic for this year's Redwood Peace Colloquy is about homelessness. I actually have two questions. So I hear people talk about homelessness and use a variety of terminology for that. From your perspective, just as we prepare, as we listen to this, and then as we, folks that are interested prepare to be a part of it, what are some of the terminologies that are acceptable, and why might some not be acceptable when we talk about those who are without homes?
Sure. I think there's an effort in our language to center people and to not necessarily make what they are experiencing their identity. So you might hear terms like houselessness because home is more like a heart feeling word. And so, yes, somebody may be without a physical house, but home is something that we carry with us. You might hear phrases like people experiencing homelessness. Again, that's an effort to center the person and not what's happening as their main identity. Some of the other terms that you might hear if you attend our event, we're going to be exploring from both ends of the spectrum. So there's this proverb that talks about, being on the side of a river and seeing people continually falling into the river and pulling them out over and over. And then eventually someone saying, I think we need to go up the river and see who's pushing people in the river. So we sort of take that proverb to heart in that there is work to be done supporting people who are tangibly experiencing not having a home. Right now. And so we have organizations that are going to speak to that. One of our guests is Family Promise. So they organize different churches to house people for certain periods of time, usually a week or 2 weeks. And they then offer wraparound services to help families get housed. So the Portland congregation is a, they actually serve as a day center for Family Promise, and they also house families for certain periods of time throughout the month. So that's one organization that I would say is doing like harm reduction, trying to help people who are experiencing something right this minute. But then we're also going to go upriver and we're going to look at some of the systemic issues that contribute to poverty in the first place. So another organization that we'll be speaking with is called Rising Up PDX, or no, Taking Ownership PDX. I'm so sorry. Taking Ownership PDX. And they really, their whole framework is to address the intersections of racism and poverty, especially the wealth gap that happens when redlining takes place in a neighborhood. So, when certain neighborhoods have historically, for years, prohibited people of color from living in them, and that's been like legal this whole time, that means that generational wealth doesn't get built. And so, their project is to support people who are living in historically black neighborhoods, predominantly black families, in maintaining their homes so that they can stay in those homes and create generational wealth. And they even frame that as a form of micro reparations, which is another big scary word that people may not may not know or may have some resistance to. But it's a way of organizing volunteers and organizing the money that's really needed to help families build generational wealth. So in that way, it is this like on a micro person-to-person scale, a way to try and reverse some of the impacts of systemic racism on poverty. So they're an organization that we're going to be talking to, where we're really trying to address what it means in our full economy, like what poverty looks like in on a large scale, and what we can do to support people who are in poverty and support people who are working to abolish poverty. So our mission initiative of abolish poverty and end suffering, that's what we are really taking seriously with this event. We're looking to connect with the Poor People's Campaign, which is a nationwide organization that is rooted from a place of faith that is trying to organize the many millions of working poor folks in our country. And try and connect them to each other to organize and to better their communities. So that's kind of a broad look of what we're doing with this theme. We're really trying to give people an understanding of what they could do on the harm reduction side. Like, say your congregation wants to join a local chapter of Family Promise, or you want to organize the denominations, the houses of worship in your area to try and support families in this way. Or you can look at it from the other end of the perspective of what are some of the issues that are contributing to poverty in the first place, and how can we organize to combat those?
That's excellent. I want to pause a second because we've mentioned already that this is one of two peace colloquies addressing this issue this
Right.
year, one being
Yes.
Central Field. And I know that you have mentioned to me that you were planning on attending the other. Do you have a
Absolutely.
sense of what maybe the distinctions are between the approaches of the two, or are they
Yes.
covering similar stuff?
I think we'll be talking about similar things. I'm good friends with the director, Jess Pyser, so I hope you get to interview her too. But my understanding is that there's actually going to be a really cool component of interweaving art into their conversations about this topic, as well as kind of upholding some organizations that are doing that, like wraparound services and support to help people out of houselessness. So, Community Services League is a local organization to Independence, and they do incredible work. And I know that they are going to be highlighted as part of that event. Spencer LaJoy is one of the musicians that's coming. It's going to be a partnership with the Under the Spiral concerts that the Center for Living Water does out of the Temple. And they are just an incredible artist. I highly recommend, after you listen to this, go and listen to the song Plowshare Prayer by Spencer LaJoie and just have a real good sacred cry because it's a beautiful prayer song and it kind of holds gently all of the big feelings that some of us might be feeling these days. So I highly recommend that. And it's, yeah, if you're in the area, if you're in the Kansas City area, definitely come check this event out too. It seems like it's going to be really powerful and informative.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I still have a million questions, and I told you
Yeah.
that that would be the case as I listened to you speak, that other things would come to mind, and I'm going to step back into the minefield of reparations for a minute.
Okay, that's
Since that you
fine.
mentioned that that was a tough word, and I think that it is a tough word. It for many people that I've talked with, it's a cringy word
Sure.
because, I hear responses like, "Well, we didn't do this. Why should we have to pay reparations?" And
Sure.
talk about, can you talk a little bit about reparations and our responsibilities in that, and how it benefits us as well in the long run?
Right. So I'll give kind of a bird's eye view of
Okay.
what that word means. So the idea is that our economic system in the United States, at its outset, was built on the enslavement of Black people. And so the labor that was provided to build all of the things that we have was really obtained in a very problematic way. And it was rooted in the fact that that labor did not get paid. And so for hundreds of years, we've got a system that has put at a disadvantage a significant portion of our population on purpose. And even when slavery was abolished, there were different rules and laws put in place to maintain that disadvantage. So when we say reparations, what we mean is we want to shift that dynamic so that it is more balanced and fair for for the descendants of people who were enslaved and for also people who continue to be disadvantaged in our economic system. And I know that that can sometimes feel it's typical for white people to feel resistance to hearing that, like somehow this is my fault. And the best way I've heard that we can describe that feeling or what to do with that feeling is to name that it may not be our fault, but it is our responsibility. And the reason for that is because whether we want to admit it or not, we have benefited from this really problematic system that's been going on for 400 plus years. And I can give a personal example to how this sort of works in housing, in relationship to housing. So I in my family, I was able to buy a house, a condo in Southern California because I was able to have assistance from family on a like secondary loan. They called it a silent second. Because, housing in California is a little crazy. So I was able to accomplish that because of the generational wealth that my family was able to bless me with. And granted, I was able to pay them back and it was a whole thing, but it meant that I had a leg up because my family had built wealth with their house and that they had inheritance from their parents' wealth. You know what I mean? So it snowballs when we connect so much to housing, this sense of building wealth. So it meant that I was able to buy a house, right? And that is different than renting. It means I'm building equity. It means I am building my own, albeit very small, little nest egg in home ownership. And so that's just a personal example to start thinking about the ways that you benefit from the generations that come before you. And I want to be very clear. Because I know that there's sometimes resistance that will say, well, that's not my family. I don't have that in my family either. And I want to say you're right. And I really want to invite you to our Peace and Justice Summer Reading list, because there's this excellent book called White Poverty that is written by Reverend William Barber. And we will be gathering on August 7th to talk about it online on Zoom, and we can link that if you have show notes. But it's a really great book that talks about the ways that we have inherited narratives that link racism and poverty, such that white people don't see shared interest in the programs that benefit poor Black people. And so there's this intentional design of poor Black people and poor white people being pitted against each other, such that they don't band together and really seek to hold power accountable so that everyone can benefit and we can all rise together. So it's a way of keeping people in poverty. And this book is a really excellent dive into what we can do to get rid of those myths and start building coalitions to work together and abolish poverty.
And we've been doing that divide and conquer for so long, we're masters at it. And
Right.
not to, no pun intended, I didn't even think about that. As I was saying, I'm going to use the term masters. But I know that in my work with racial justice, that the whole separation of indentured servants, the white from the black,
Right.
was so that they wouldn't essentially unionize and turn on the owners. So they created even a class system within the
Right.
servants, which served to oppress even farther those people of color. So, and we've been doing this for a long time, keeping that separation, pitting them against each other, pitting us against each
Us
other in
against each
a lot of
other,
ways. And
correct.
it's happening in other ways in our culture now. So,
And it's both
I want to.
upsetting and empowering, right? That it's an
Yeah.
upsetting thing that has happened, but it also points to the fact that we hold power when we do build coalitions and when we
Yes.
do link arms and recognize that our welfare is bound up in the welfare of others. So there's that theology again.
Yeah.
That really calls us to link arms with each other, and we have more power than we think.
And you mentioned another piece that I want to just lift up and maybe amplify a little bit, because when you talked about the fact that some of our listeners and people who hear us talk about reparations and that kind of thing are like, well, especially with generational wealth, well, my family doesn't have that. I just want to maybe take a minute to talk about what we mean by wealth, because we hear wealth and we assume this super rich 1%, but wealth is really defined larger than that, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, when I think about the fact that I'm able to comfortably pay my bills and to not have to strategize when I pay a certain bill based on when a check comes in, that in itself is wealth. And again, that's not everyone's experience. And so what we're really hoping is that we can come together and learn about this invisible epidemic of poverty and how we can talk across some of those dividing lines with empathy and with openness and not necessarily feel so defensive. The more we can feel open, the more we can lift from the bottom and everyone can thrive.
That's really helpful, Emily. Thanks. I want to now look back at the Peace Colloquy that's coming up, the Redwood Peace
Yeah.
Colloquy that's coming up. And you've talked a little bit about some of the organizations that we'll be hearing from there at the colloquy. What else might we expect? What else might our listeners expect from attending the colloquy? What kind of things will be
Yeah.
happening? Will it be sit-down seminars, listening to presenters? What does that look
Yeah.
like?
Absolutely. So, like I said, it's December 5th through the 7th. So, Friday night is our first gathering at the church, and we're going to be watching a documentary called Priced Out. And it talks about sort of the process of gentrification, which is another big word that we might not have exposure to, but
You
we can
just
keep it.
keep doing that to
I
me.
just keep it. You know what? We're going to learn so much together. It talks about the gentrification of Portland. So you're going to get to learn a little bit about the history of the city that we're visiting, and how different laws that took place and different practices of keeping people out, as well as what happens when people with wealth decide that an area is cheap enough to buy and then live in, which then brings in all of these, it makes it the neighborhood expensive to live in. So then as property values go up, property taxes go up, and then the people who have been there for years can no longer afford to live there. So it takes you through that experience, and it's just a really cool documentary to help wrap your head around how that can happen and does happen in cities across the country. So it'll have you driving through your own neighborhoods thinking about what you learned from this documentary. So that's Friday night. Saturday is when we're going to have our breakout sessions with some of those organizations that I mentioned. Also, organizing a organization fair. So like there will be booths from other organizations that are both local and have national chapters that you can try and get involved in or learn about. So that'll be available Saturday. Saturday night, we want to have some like cozy Christmas vibes because it's in December. So we're hoping to I don't know. We're just going to have some fun together. We're hoping to do a little bit of a service project for the families that Family Promise supports, and also maybe decorate cookies or sing some Christmas carols, do some cozy Christmas vibes that evening. And then Sunday morning, we'll have our closing worship, and we'll get to be with not only the Portland congregation, but we're hoping that the other local congregations in the area will join us Sunday morning so we can have a big send off. And yeah, then we'll send everyone home with lunch and lots of good information to try and support the communities where they live.
Excellent. Well,
Yeah.
if someone is interested in this peace colloquy, which I am hoping they will be, and I am looking forward to being there, what do they do from this point?
So from here, I would love two things. First, our website, the easiest way to find it is bit.ly, so BIT dash ly, and then slash love your neighbor, all of those words capitalized, 2025. So bit.ly slash love your neighbor 2025. And that's our landing page. So you can learn more about registration. Registration is open, so we'd love to see you register and come. We have a block of rooms at a hotel that is right by the airport. So if you're coming from out of town, you can call and reserve at our group rate, which is a little bit lower than what the normal rate is. And we will be providing transportation to and from the church. So all you really need to do is get yourself from the airport to the hotel, and we will take it from there. There's a shuttle. If you've got any transportation questions, I am more than happy to help with that. And yeah, registration costs $150, and we would love for you to come. So that's my first request. Go check that website out. My second is we are hosting two gatherings to talk about our Peace and Justice summer reading list. So there's two books that we're reading together. One is White Poverty, that book that I mentioned before. White Poverty, How Exposing Myths About Race and Class Can Reconstruct American Democracy. Again, that's by Reverend William Barber. And then we're also reading a book called Poverty by America. And the author there is Matthew Desmond. And so we'll be discussing those in the fall. You still have time to read both. I highly recommend the audiobooks because that's how I read books quickly. So check out your local library for an audiobook there. But yeah, so we'll be meeting on the first Thursday of August and the first Thursday of September. So August 7th at 6 p.m. Pacific time, we'll be gathering on Zoom to talk about white poverty. And then September 4th at that same time, 6 p.m. Pacific, is when we'll gather to talk about Poverty by America. And our goal with this is we really want those of you who are able to come to this event to have time to prepare and learn about the topic even before we get there. But we also want folks who are maybe not able to attend the event, but still want to learn in community about this topic. These two books are excellent ways to do that. So we really hope that you'll join us, even if you're unable to come to the event, or especially if you are.
Well, you just answered several of my next questions.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, I was going to make sure that we covered the books because you had mentioned the one. So great.
Yes.
And the invitation to all of you, whether or not you're coming to the colloquy, get the books and join Emily for those conversations, Emily and others. And I will just tell you that I got them out of order because I started reading The Poverty by America first.
Oh, that's
So,
okay.
but that's all right. I have time. I have
You have
time.
time, especially if you go for the audiobook. I 10 out of 10 recommend.
Yeah,
There
I've got some flight time coming up, so
you go.
yeah, I'll get the
Yeah.
audiobook for that. So very, very helpful information and so eloquently put, Emily. I want to, before we close out though, give you an opportunity. Is there anything that I haven't asked about that our listeners ought to know or that you want to share?
I don't think so. I think I am thrilled to get to speak to this event and also to this vision of what it looks like to do mission with people outside of us. So if there's one thing you take away from this conversation is that there is something really powerful that can happen when we join forces with people in our communities who are already doing good work and can help us learn.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, listeners, if you haven't gotten an idea in just listening to Emily of just how infectious her passion and energy are, you really, really need to check out this colloquy if you can. If not, at least again, go back and read those, purchase those texts. If you like, some people like to have a text to hold on to and write in and earmark and all of that. Great. If you
Sure.
need just a quick way to do it, Emily has said, try out the Audible. But either way, and even if you're just in the middle of the books, join the conversation. Come
Please
listen
do.
in
Yeah.
and hear what's going on and get connected with that passion. I am very excited, even more so than I was already. So it was really great to spend some time with you, Emily. And I want to just thank you for taking the time out of what I'm sure is a busy schedule. I know what it's like to be working remotely and traveling and all of that. And I don't have children anymore at home. And you have an absolutely adorable son who I
Pretty
got a chance to meet finally
excellent.
this summer. So
Yeah.
thanks for taking the time to be with me.
It is my deep joy. Thanks for asking.
And thank you to all of our listeners here at Project Zion Podcast. I do want to make one quick note just about the podcast. If you were not at conference, you may not know yet, but we will be rebranding the podcast on September 1st to Faith Unfiltered Podcast. So we just want to make that known so you can be watching for it, and we'll make the transition just as seamless as possible so that you don't miss an episode. But again, thank you for being with us, taking part of your day to be with us here at Project Zion Podcast. Encourage you to look at the show notes where we'll put all of the links to the other colloquy and to the books and everything that we've talked about here that needs to be linked. And we hope to see you in another episode soon. I'm Blake Smith, and I've been your host here today for What's Brewing, and we hope you'll join us again soon. Take care and have a great day.